Seek to Understand, a podcast about holistic wellness and a bunch of other stuff, coming from humans with experience and shower thoughts. Not intended to serve as medical advice or treatment. We want to help you understand your why. Brought to you by Kelly Cash, Neva Wilkerson, and Brandon Johnson. Here we go.
Getting in shape can be hard. Finding time to drive all the way to the gym with everything else going on can be daunting, but it is super important. That's why my wife Trista and I have developed Fit From Home. Now you can get strong from the comfort of your own home. You need very little equipment and about 30 minutes of your time. You work out directly with us as we give you options for each exercise. You get access to daily workouts, informational presentations, and epic bonus workouts. You also get access to a private Facebook group full of people sharing a common goal. All of this for just $16 a month. Go to changeinmotionpt.com and click the Fit From Home link to sign up today.
Happiness is not.
Should we talk about this?
Sure, why not? So is happiness a destination? No, happiness is a mindset. What did I say earlier? Because 100% of what I don't accomplish is because my mind tells me I can't, or I shouldn't, or I am not good enough, or whatever. So your mind is what controls everything.
I don't think there is a destination except for death.
You know, I think that is the destination.
That is the destination, right? But I don't think.
But we can even debate that. Is that truly the final destination?
Boy.
That could go a long way because I don't know about that. So
right.
That's what's kind of exciting. I don't know what's next. And so, but I don't know.
But you should enjoy the journey. You know, that's the point. That's the point with happiness. That's the point with physical activity, with exercise, with weight loss, with any of it. If you can, it is kind of a trick, but if you can trick yourself into enjoying the journey that you're on, to being happy with the journey that you're on, then the destination will become less significant.
When you think of destination, don't you think the end?
Yes.
So that's
I think that's how we ended up at death, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't want any destination other than
right now. Right now, in this present moment, is the most important thing, right?
Absolutely.
Can we control what happens in the future? Yeah, to some degree, right? Because of the choices we make right now. Does our past matter? Yes, it influences our decisions. But as you alluded, it is the mindset that we're in right now.
And I think you need to kind of look and analyze yourself often and decide, are you an optimistic or pessimist? Say that word for me.
Pessimist.
And it drives me crazy when people just say, well, I'm just a pessimist. I have a pessimistic attitude.
Well, cut that shit
out. Well, if you know that, then freaking change it. If you can say it out loud that that's what you have and you recognize it, this is just who I am. This is just how I've been made. I'm going to debate you every time. And I'm not going to want to listen to what you have to say until you tell me that you can change it, because you have a mindset to make change. And you need to figure out, why are you a pessimist? Is it because your mom and dad were that way? Then don't be like your mom and dad. Surround yourself with people that are optimists. Strive to be more like them, not the people that you don't want to be like. And don't just say that's just who you are, because you're not fun to be around.
No, and that negative energy impacts every aspect of your life, right?
Every.
Including your health. Your physical health and well-being.
Every aspect of your life. We talked about this when we were talking about mindfulness. The things that you say to yourself in the mirror. You know, I'm fat, I'm old, I'm tired. No.
Ugly, I have gray hair.
Yeah. No. If you tell yourself that, that's what you're going to become. And sometimes you have to repeat to yourself over and over and over that you're not that. And so the way you talk to yourself dictates how you talk to others. Sometimes, because a lot of times I'm kinder to others than I am to myself. Most of the time I'm kinder to others than I am to myself. Until somebody like Kelly or Brandon called me out on it.
I'm happy.
So I'd like to introduce suggest a third ist, because I think this is probably one of the reasons that I had a hard time articulating what makes you happy, because I think there's an optimist, I think there's a pessimist, and then I think there's a realist.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah. And I'm a hardcore realist. I have the perspective that things could go poorly, and I have the perspective that things could go well. And this is, my wife is going to love that I'm bringing this up, because she's hoping you guys are going to both jump on me right now, because she does not like that I prepare myself for things to go poorly.
I think that you and Jesse are very similar in that aspect. Yeah. Yes, he's 100% a realist, and be prepared for things to go poorly.
Be prepared, and then if they don't, it's all good. You know, it's a pleasant surprise. I don't expect it to go poorly. I'm not a pessimist. I don't think, oh, this is just going to go poorly for me, but I think that everything has two outcomes, and you should be prepared for both. And my wife won't entertain the latter. She won't entertain the bad sometimes.
Because you want to think that the positive is going to happen, right?
Exactly. Manifest the positive.
So where does that come from? Why do you think that?
Oh, golly.
Like, if I had to analyze him, it's because he's worked in EMS and fire
It's the 20 same
plus
thing.
Years.
You know how ugly shit can get.
He's seen the worst of the worst
of
the worst.
You know how bad things
can
be.
And so, he's prepared because he's had that experience. Yeah. So I think that maybe those experiences shape that perspective.
Absolutely. I can tell you that that's where mine comes from. You know, childhood trauma, you see things in your childhood and you go like, well, okay, that's how life is now. You know, like it. So that prepares you for things like that. And then it can become... You know, seeing things like that and taking part in things like that can make you become optimistic or pessimistic, right? And then so that's where the realism comes from. It came from me being a pessimist that didn't want to be a pessimist, right?
So there's a happy medium.
There's somewhere in the middle. And I think that translates to just about everything. Like, you know, neither one of us are extreme dieters, right? We're right in the middle. I'm not all carnivore. You're not all vegetarian. We're somewhere in the middle, right? Or maybe less in the middle that way. But the point remains that I think you can do all those things and be kind of in the middle.
I've watched and witnessed myself and others, particularly working with at-risk kids for a large portion of my career and doing mental health in every aspect of my life. I've had some component of mental health training, is that we set ourselves up for failure when we're about to succeed. And so sometimes when we look at the negatives of the things that could happen, it's a safety net.
That self-sabotage.
Yes, it's a safety net so that you don't get disappointed, because you've been disappointed way too many times in your life.
Dude, nailed it.
And so you're setting yourself up to be more excited and happy. But then sometimes we don't even let ourselves get to that point. We don't let us succeed or see the optimistic or the good outcome because we don't feel like that we deserve it or that we belong there, because we have that insecurity, and we've seen it so often fail, and it won't sustain. Because if you've been in a relationship or something and then it didn't last, or your parents were divorced and it didn't last, then you don't believe that it can truly last forever. The happiness can never truly last forever. And so I think you have to be very cautious with that, of being a realist, that you're not setting yourself up for
disappointment.
In the end, because you think you're setting yourself up for not being disappointed, but you're actually protecting yourself from becoming disappointed. And sometimes you can grow through disappointment.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And you can overcome. And so to be cautious about, again, always about the why. Why are you doing it? Mm-hmm. And what's motivating that? And why do you think you're not supposed to be success? It's not going to last. It's not sustainable. Why? And I think, unfortunately, in the world that we live in, everything is disposable. Everything is disposable. You don't like this coat, you go buy a new coat. This car is not good enough, you go buy a new car. You don't want to eat this for dinner, you go get something different for dinner. They even make things that they don't last. I mean, shoot, the refrigerator I had when I first moved out 35, 40 years ago on my own, I mean, that refrigerator is probably still ticking to this day, but the refrigerator you buy now, it lasts 2 years and then you have to get a new one. And so everything is disposable. So is it sustainable? And so I think we get concerned that, or fearful that, I can't let myself be too happy because it's not going to last, and then I'm going to be highly disappointed.
Mm-hmm. So. What goes up must come down type thing.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not always what goes down must come up. Isn't that interesting when you talk about mental health, right? You're never going to be able to be happy for very long, but you can be unhappy for very long.
It's a lot easier to fall into that pattern.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Definitely. But again, I think that comes from just not feeling like you have any say or control or input into your own life. And one of the things we're doing is to try to give you tools to, you know, move and to just have control over whatever you can have control over, yeah. Like we talked about.
And find your joy.
And I find empowerment by empowering others. And I have to hold myself accountable. If I'm telling you to do this, then I need to be doing it as mm-hmm. well. And so do as I say, not as I do, is not a good statement for me. And so one of the reasons I like to do these kind of things is because it holds me accountable. Because like even if on our happiness podcast, that day I was not in a good mental space. I listened to that podcast over 3 different times and I analyzed myself over and over and over. And then I let it go. Because I thought maybe something that I said helped somebody. But
I just giggled. I thought it was great.
But, you know, so I mean, it's just, you know, again, what's going on in your head mm-hmm. can sabotage you unnecessarily. And to realize it's a temporary, everything is temporary. Everything is temporary. But it's not disposable. Not everything needs to be disposable. I mean, relationships are not disposable. I mean, I'm frustrated with the world that, how many families, well, this one doesn't work out, so I'm just going to go with this guy and have another baby, and this one another and have another baby. You know, it's just disposable. Relationships shouldn't be disposable. Life shouldn't be disposable. Yeah,
you have to do hard things.
You do. You have to work at it. You have to constantly work at yourself and work at relationships.
But I think you sort of started to, I don't know the word I'm looking for, you started to talk about this, but, you know, the power in understanding your why. And like, why do you feel like you are a realist? And you understand that. And I think, so I just think there is a lot of power in knowing who you are and why you're like that. And it doesn't mean you have to change. But I think that if you do understand that, you may be able to tweak a few things to bring a little bit more happiness into your life.
And with that being said, too, like when we go back to our childhood things, you cannot cast blame. So I used to run around with somebody in high school that blamed everything on the fact that her parents were divorced. And one time I had a group of at-risk girls come into the shop to talk to me as a business owner. And every one of them introduced themselves like, hi, I'm Neva. My parents are divorced and I'm in this program because. Hi, I'm Kelly and my parents are divorced. And all of them mentioned that their parents were divorced. So I waited and we got all done and everything. I said, I'd like to go back to our introductions. So why did you introduce yourself that your parents are divorced? How does that make you who you are? Because if I had stood up here as this business owner and you're looking up to me, if I had said, hi, I'm Neva and my parents have been married 3 times apiece and blah, blah, blah. How does that tell you and how does that make you look at me? So don't use that as a, I'm this way because of something somebody else did.
It no doubt shapes you.
It shapes you, but it shouldn't be.
They were identifying by
but
it.
Don't let it own you.
Don't let it own you and don't let it become your identity. And so if your parents were an alcoholic or somebody in your family was an alcoholic, don't take that on as who you are.
Right.
Don't take other people's identity to who you are and carry it.
Same with genetic or medical traits that we talk about, right? I mean, you are your own person. And you can create your destiny.
And I don't think it...
If happiness is your destination.
And I think that sometimes we don't take responsibility and don't want to articulate things that happened in our past because we don't want to hurt other people's feelings as well. And so I can say that my parents were divorced 3 times apiece, and that's not negative against my parents. That was just how their life panned out. But I'm not going to take that as to my lifestyle or to mm-hmm. who I am. Mm-hmm. Thank God my parents divorced 3 times apiece because they didn't find the best one until the last one, you know. Or so it's like, okay, at least you kept trying, you know, to find your happiness. And if they weren't happy, then I wouldn't be happy. And so I think that you can find positives and negatives and positives and negative circumstances in your life and your childhood. But you need to look at it and see how is it affecting you. And how is it serving you? And then to reevaluate it.
Yes. How is it serving you? Can you let some of it go?
Yes. Is it serving you well or is it holding you back? And then let it go.
Let it go.
Let it go. Yeah, I don't think you have to, I mean, can revisit it every now
it's
and
good
then.
Song.
Everything comes back to a song for me.
Yep,
I noticed that. I love it.
Yep, I like it.
I love it. Or
she's
movie.
She's going to serenade you.
You guys do, yeah, yes. So you guys do, because on our happiness, I'm like, I don't know any of these movies. I feel so out of touch.
You don't know Miss Congeniality?
I think I watched it. No, I don't know movies. I don't know actors. I don't know songs.
Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
Oh, I do remember that movie. Yeah. I do. But no, I don't.
Yeah. It's
because when there was the, oh, what was those? When you went to the store and you got the movies and you took them home and watched them on your...
The rental place?
Yeah, the rental
the
place.
Rental.
Yeah, Blockbusters.
They had, Wallace was it Video Castle in Centralia?
Yes. Wallace finally stopped sending me because I'd always come home with one we'd already watched. I'm like, oh, I can't remember.
That's funny.
He's like,
not important to
not
you.
Not important to me.
Yeah.
This looked like a good one. It was good. We watched it three times already. From now on, I'm picking out the movies. Okay, fine.
Not sending you Neva.
Same thing with books. I'll pick up a book. I'm like, oh, this sounds... Oh, yeah, I read it.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking to a marriage counselor one time, Tristan and I were. And the marriage counselor told me that she asked about my childhood and things like that. And she said that she wanted to... She was religious, and she wanted to introduce me to the men in her, the older men in her church group, because in her opinion, no man can grow up to be a man without a male role model. And, you know, this goes back into what can define you, right? This mm-hmm. is where I got that thought from, is like, what can define you? Because the fact that I didn't have one didn't define me in a... defeating way. It empowered me, right? Like, that's what I told her. Like, I can learn how to be from the men that you're going to introduce me to, but I can learn everything I need not to be from the one thing I got, right? So I mm-hmm. took what I got, and I don't know how, you know, I think I'm probably, based on my childhood, I'm like one weird night away from being addicted to drugs for real, right? Like, I could have easily, just as easily, gone down that path, but something inside me, you know, knew that that wasn't ever going to be an option. So, and I got lucky, again, really lucky, that that's just how my brain developed that scenario in my head when I was really young, right? But, and I know that doesn't happen to everybody, sometimes and ever, really for real ever, and sometimes it doesn't happen to you until you get older, but it's never too late, right? I think is what we're getting at here, that the journey of to get to any level of happiness that I could get based on the situation I had to take a journey inward to, like you were talking about, figure out how all that made me feel and how did I respond, and what has cascaded since then, you know. And it's easy to identify, it could be easy to identify yourself as, I'm a child of divorce.
I'm a victim.
I'm the
victim. Yeah, I'm a victim
here.
Or I'm a product of.
Right.
Yeah. I'm a
but
product
as soon
of
as you become a victim in any scenario, unless you're an actual victim of some shit, then that's not, I'm not talking to you, but as soon as you let yourself become victimized, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And so you cannot ever let that happen.
I think you nailed that when you said you chose to be a person, you developed as a man because you knew the qualities that you wanted to have that you weren't exposed to or you didn't have in your life. And I think a lot of people are like that because of their negative situations. They know they don't want their children to experience the same yep. thing that they experience. And so they're going to be better and do better.
Yep.
So I do think that traumatic things can shape you in a very positive way. Yep. You know, there can be a positive light.
So what happens though? What is the difference between that, it empowering me positively, and it empowering somebody in the exact same scenario negatively? What is the difference? Is it luck? Is it
that is the
luck?
One
I think it is luck. I mean, I don't know.
I think that this has been a long conversation with me in my career, because I did work with at-risk kids. And so, and I went to a lot of conferences on those kind of things. And why, have you ever read the book, A Child Called It and A Man Named David? So A Child Called It is written, I can't remember his last name, David Peltzer, I think. Severe child abuse. I mean, severe child abuse. And then one of his last books is A Man Named David, about how he grew up and he came through that. And we were all like, how can some people go through that amount of child abuse and still come out okay? And then how can some just, you know, parents are divorced one time and they fall apart and,
yeah.
or
yeah.
whatever, or yeah. they got, you know, kicked by somebody else on the playground and then their life was up. So I don't know that it's pure luck. And I don't know the answer to that. That is the one, that's not the only one, but that's one of the unknown questions for me, is how,
why does that happen?
I can't, there's no why.
Because
there's
I can no tell you plenty of people who had advantages like I did. You know, I came from a two-parent household. My parents did pretty well, you know, enough that by the time they had my younger siblings, they were established enough in their careers and, you know, made good money. And I can tell you that there are, I guess, kids that grew up in similar situations who became addicted to drugs or completely ruined their lives because, you know, maybe they had the advantage of getting all this stuff. But I just think it can happen to anybody. I don't know that there's socioeconomic or demographic or family dynamic things that really influence it. I think it's...
I would agree. Yeah, but we're poking holes in our own theories then, because there's no why. There's no why, guys.
Oh, shit. We got to end our podcast.
We'll see you guys later.
I think that's true, though. I mean, so we've said this before. You know, some things are just not answerable. There's no answer. There's no tangible answer. And so, but I think that's the cool thing because that keeps me running. That keeps me chasing. That keeps me looking. That keeps me seeking.
Yeah.
And I may never find the final destination of the answer, but I'm going to find out a whole lot of cool shit along the way. And I'm going to find things about myself, about the world, about the people that are in my life. I mean, you're going to find out some really cool things that you didn't know because you're chasing the why. And so I don't know that there is a destination end ever. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just kind of forever ongoing, which is what I think is cool. But I'm not going to stop chasing the why because it's led me down to some really cool paths of self-discovery and to understanding other people, to loving life more, to being more fulfilled. It's just amazing. It's amazing. A lot of times when we look at our childhood, we self-sabotage by having expectations of our parents, or we have expectations of others, of what they should have been, because so-and-so's... Prime example, one time my kids came home and said, "Mom, you wouldn't believe so-and-so's mom. They made Thanksgiving dinner on Tuesday," like in January or June or something. I'm like, fine, I suck as a mom because you're having peanut butter sandwiches for supper. You know, so that expectation. But even with your parents and your siblings and your spouse, your children, that you have expectations of how they're supposed to behave. You're setting yourself up for failure. The last statement that I said to my father was, "I love you because you're my father, period." That's all it took for me to love you, is that you're my father.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to be the Beaver Cleaver dad ever. And I don't know all the baggage in your closet. And I'm not going to allow your baggage to define my life. I'm not going to blame you for all my failures, but you don't get credit for all my successes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the author of my own story, and I get to place you as a character however I want to. And so I'm going to choose to do that in a positive manner versus bashing you to the world. And so I think it's a choice of having expectations.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, for yourself, setting too high of expectations for yourself, we're human.
Well, that's where I was going to go with that, was social media and expectations that, you know, we think, you mentioned the Thanksgiving dinner and peanut butter sandwiches. You know, folks post their amazing meal that they've created on social media, and it makes we look at that and automatically feel like we're inadequate because we weren't able to create this amazing meal. So that affects our happiness too, right? Because we're somewhat jealous or feel like we're less than because we can't make the sourdough bread, or I killed my starter a long time ago.
Me too.
You know, just whatever it is that they're doing, that they're portraying in that snapshot on social media, that makes us feel like we can't live up to that expectation. And so I think that really affects happiness all over the place.
All over the place.
That's why I won't let my kids have it, or my son, you know. He's not going to get it till he can vote.
Yeah, that's what I've told my 18. Social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was lucky that it wasn't a big thing until my kids were old enough to have it on their own. But somebody gave me really good advice one time about talking to my children about, when you're having a hard conversation with them, how would you talk to your best friend's child? So what would you say to your best friend's child? And how would you say it? In what tone would you say it?
Completely different than your own kids, right?
Because you have an expectation. You know how your kid was raised, and you know what your expectation is of that kid. You know what they're capable of doing. So you hold them to a higher standard, which is not fair to them nor you.
Yeah.
And so that was a really good advice, and I tried really hard to do that with my kids.
That's where Maytag came from.
I made a lot of mistakes along the way, but, you know, stepping back and going, okay, this was Angie's daughter, what would I say to her versus my kid? Mm-hmm. And I also did a secret notebook. I don't know if I've mentioned it before. We did notebooks a lot of times so that we could write back and forth so that you wouldn't have that knee-jerk reaction as a parent to go, what? You could think about it and then write. And there was only one time with my stepdaughter that I had to walk into her room and go, nope, you got to read my facial expressions when we talk about this one.
Yeah.
Because this one's that serious.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
So, I gave it a couple of days before I did it. But so sometimes we've talked about journaling before, writing things down, and sometimes just writing a letter to your child or a notebook back and forth mm-hmm. or to your spouse, it's easier.
Or to yourself to let some things go.
Mm-hmm. All the time, right? To myself all the time. Good stuff. Be kind to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Time to wrap it up. See ya.
Have a good weekend.